Now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's time for the only area radio show devoted exclusively to football. That is to say, soccer.
Local, MLS, Premier League, and international.
It's Blokes on the Bench, and you can reach us at 434-284-9470 or at facebook.com/blokesonthebench. Now here's your host, Andy Richardson.
Hello, Charlottesville.
I don't actually know why I just said that. And then a posh English accent. Welcome along to Blokes on the Bench. So there's no, there's no Premier League this week, but there's plenty of friendlies, a lot to get through as well. The theme of this week, I would say, would be managers losing their jobs and getting jobs. I'm going to say this to the City supporters here we have. Are you guys not pulling your hair out just because we're so used to seeing City win on the bounce the last few weeks and now we're off for the... You know, no games. I kind of really miss watching them play. I know that's hard to say for a United supporter, but
I'm just glad that Sterling pulled out of the match and that they made it. Sané made it through without injury. I'm just sitting here with fingers crossed, really.
Okay, all right. So let's just jump into the World Cup qualifying games that we had. And the first one, what was that one, Alex?
First game was Northern Ireland against Switzerland.
Okay.
Switzerland gets the 1-0 victory.
Is it zero or nil? Do we have an accepted nomenclature here in America? I know there are the Euro snobs.
I think people think if you say nil, it's a little pretentious.
Do we play on a field or a pitch?
Well, it's a match, right? It's a match on the pitch, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, my whole thing is I if I'm talking about soccer, I say nil. I say pitch. If I'm talking about, you know, American football, I say field and zero. And I feel like you should respect the nomenclature that's used most widely around the world.
So you're a chameleon.
I guess.
There
you
go.
Not necessarily the world. I mean, does football belong to Europe anymore? To England? It doesn't belong to England specific anymore. That's for sure. Maybe Europe in general. South America, obviously, is mental for football. I don't know what the Spanish is for field or pitch. I'm not a big follower of the South American leagues.
But let's not try and go through and try and translate all this. we're going to be very unsuccessful.
We've got an hour. Come on, let's talk about this.
Apparently, this is like the Rosetta Stone version of the show.
See, but as an English major in college, I'm a real lover of language. The language you use matters, and to me, it's just if most people who speak English in the world are going to use terms like pitch, nil, yada yada yada. I mean, it's specific to the sport. So when I talk about the sport, that's the language I use.
Okay, so the big talking point about the Northern Ireland game was obviously the penalty. I watched it. I didn't actually watch the game, but I did watch the penalty, and it did kind of come off his shoulder, but he was clearly getting out of the way. That was not a penalty.
Yeah, I didn't think it was either. It was a poor decision from the ref. It seemed as though he was a little bit behind the play, didn't have necessarily the best angle to really make that decision, made the decision nonetheless, and unfortunately for the Northern Ireland, Northern Irish, they lost round one, and then we'll get to it eventually. But
right.
they lost the second round as well. They drew the next round, and then on aggregate, they lost 1-0.
Yeah,
1-0.
I mean,
whatever.
Go ahead.
See, I'll out myself a little bit here. I love talking about officiating, only because I happen to be a basketball official. So I love talking about officiating. That was terrible. That should have never happened. And I don't know. I mean, I've never officiated soccer. Well, not since I was a teenager. So I don't know what the mechanics are for something like that to happen. But there's no reason. Just like you said, he was in a bad position, had a bad angle, made the wrong decision, and then the assistant didn't come in and say anything. Or if he did, he was ignored. I don't know. That type of thing should not happen at that level.
Well, that's right. The beauty that I think we all want is the video replay. Which is really, I think, what would solve these kind of problems once and for all. It will more than likely be, it hasn't officially been instituted and said it's going to be in the World Cup next year in Russia, but it sure looks like it's heading that direction, and I think it's for the best. Maybe the match takes 5 minutes longer because of VAR, as they call it, But you know what? I think that it's worthy to spend that extra time to get the calls right when it's the difference between you, whether you advance, win, lose, draw. I mean, these make big differences. And you certainly don't want the wrong team to ultimately win the World Cup, which, I mean, basically what if you the biggest call, I think, recently in terms of red cards and things like that it was Germany against Italy, right? France, Italy. And when Zidane headbutted the guy, Materazzi, I believe his name was, because he said some horrible things, and supposedly what happened was the fourth official looked up and saw the replay on the big screen, and that was the only way that they really got the call right, and right. that Zidane got the red card, which ultimately led to Italy winning the game. And I think that was, it wasn't like official video replay, but, you know, you see someone headbutting someone in the game, you're gonna tell the referee that, and they did that, and the right call was made, and it was probably the first time it was ever really used.
I think if we're going to get into video replay, and we already are, it's already here with Germany using it and the World Cup coming, that we're taking less and less of the human element out of sport, which I'm not a fan of. I'm a big baseball fan, and baseball video replay is unbelievably tedious and executed poorly. The NFL, I don't watch the NFL, but part of the reason that the NFL is boring is that there's too much time spent looking at plays endlessly. They're now debating what a catch is, what a catch isn't. Football is a little more binary, where it's a goal or it's not, it's offside or it's not, and I get that. But to me, it's always about the live event. And the second that we make TV more important than the live event itself, and yeah, getting the call right is the most important thing, then you need officials who are held accountable, who are in the best shape, and who are uncorruptible to a certain degree. I mean, going to Russia, you'd think, well, there's going to be a lot of corruption anyway. But those those officials are going to be brought in from all the leagues all around the world, the best of the best of the best. But the bottom line is, we need to keep the people that are in the seats as engaged and entertained right. as they should be. And the second that you say there's a timeout on the field to judge the call, you're delaying the gratification of mm-hmm. the moment to those sports. But that said,
but do you think people are switching off, like switching to a different channel when that happens?
No,
I don't think so. You don't see that with the NFL.
But I think the NFL, that's the seed that got planted that slowed the game down. And with MLB, to be fair, we're seeing this in just the last few years, how badly it's done. I mean, it's just such a shame to see the game stop for 4 to 6 minutes, which isn't going to happen with this process. And I give you that. And I've seen it happen in the Bundesliga, where it's an almost immediate transition from the official going to the earpiece or his watch or whatever it may be to give him the information needed. I think the fallibility of officials, the fallibility of players, fallibility of managers is what makes sport what it is, which is exciting. And, you know, we might as well just have a computer simulation then for right. everything to occur.
But I think it's funny that you're talking about how you want refs to make bad decisions, not make bad decisions, but you're willing to, like, that for that to be part of the game, when one of the games that happened this week was a replay of Senegal-South Africa.
Mm. I do need to point out, by the way, before you move on to the next game.
But I'm not even... Well,
we had a poll going on our Twitter page about that Northern Ireland penalty, and 71% said that the decision was not fair, which was not surprising to me.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, and I think you can implement... It's all about the implementation of VAR. The way, for example, MLS does it, I don't think is the optimal way of doing it, where you're going to have the match official go to a monitor on the side of the field to look
ridiculous.
At what he's already seen. What you need to do is you need to have a dedicated official watching.
The fourth official should be doing that.
Yes, yeah. Someone watching the game, watching the replay, so that the process can be more instantaneous.
Yeah, so you literally don't need to like run across the field to look at screens. Like, the NFL has stopped that as well. No longer is it the referee making the decision. It's someone in, like, New York or something like that.
Sorry, so in MLS, the head official goes over to a booth or whatever to view what's going on to get the call right. Way to go, MLS. That's just further evidence of how Mickey Mouse that whole league is. And getting into a deeper point on MLS, this weekend with all these internationals going on, the friendlies and some qualification for World Cup going on, MLS had no matches going on this weekend. Talk about a great opportunity to have MLS playoffs going on, which should be their big selling point. There were no matches today, and there were no matches yesterday to highlight their product in a just open window for them, essentially.
Right, but don't you think also, like, listen, at the point when a decision goes against you, there's no solace in that. It happens to everyone. Like Christian was saying, like last week, you know, eventually it will come around to you. It kind of evens itself out of the season when you have a decision go against you. However, with new technology comes in, there's a certain element of like the banter and the talk that it brings during the week. Your weekday at work, you're talking about it. That kind of gets lost.
maybe, although then you just start talking about, well, it came down to VAR for, you know, the call for the penalty, or a call got overturned. I mean, they'll always find something to talk about.
Right.
And is VAR, so is that, is the call on the field what is most important, or do they go to this and they say, well, there's irrefutable evidence to say this is the right call. So now these officials can basically rely on video replay to bail them out on anything. So if you're an official, and we have somebody who's a referee in essence, if you have that backing you up no matter what, do you really feel that you're that engaged or that important in the process?
I will say this. I was an NCAA basketball referee. Now, granted, it was at the Division III and Division II level, but I was officiating when, you know, video replay really became, you know, a norm in college basketball. And every official that I knew welcomed it to the degree that you don't. Now, it's one of those things where, you know, if there's something that's debated, okay, we can go look, take a look at it and make sure we got it right. Because in the end, officials want to get the calls right. That's all you want to do. I think that that's why implementation is important, because I think that officials are more likely to receive it well if they know who the other person is, you know, on there making the decision. If they know that you know, that's another official. And it just makes it easier for the fans. I mean, that's what hockey does that now. Right. The NHL does that. The NBA does that. I mean, that's the way to do it.
Don't forget, guys, you're tuning into Blokes on the Bench. You can get in contact with us 434-284-9470. Also, hit us up on our Twitter page. We're running some polls right now. That's BOTB Soccer. If somebody has the poll there to want to read out for everybody.
Let's see. So the poll we had most recently was the best manager in the world. Now, we only put up five options.
Four options.
Four options. I'm sorry. Yeah, four options. So, you know, work with the four options we have. But the four options were Zinedine Zidane, Pep Guardiola, although little typo, we put Pepe. It's okay. Conte and Allegri, Antonio Conte and Allegri at Juve. So those are the four options. And then, you know, go to the Twitter page, hit us up and vote. Let us know who you think is the best manager in the world right now.
Or are we missing someone?
And are we going to discuss that here on air as well? I mean, we only went with these four options, but there's plenty of space
right,
here.
Of course.
Now, you're talking about top four, top five. But do we have a consensus about who even the top manager in the world is right now? I mean, that to me is where there's some gray area that you can find some discussion in that, you know, while Zidane has only been at Real Madrid for a few years, you really can't debate what he's done in that short time.
I think that if you asked that question maybe 2 weeks ago, you got a lot more people saying Zidane. But they're not super happy in Madrid right now with what's happened of late. You know, they lost to Tottenham. They lost to...
Yeah, Girona. Yeah, yeah. Well, those happy, lucky people in Madrid who support their team no matter what they go through. There's an immediacy, obviously, to the results. But when he came into Real Madrid, they were sort of adrift at that point as well. And he not only steadied that ship, but he took them into the glory land of winning a Champions League. And then the next year they won the double. So, and defended that Champions League trophy. I think that while things are tough right now, look at the players that are on injury for them. And their match structures that they've come into. I mean, playing Spurs last week was a big match, no doubt about it, and they didn't come through. But I think overall they'll be fine. It's still November, as we've talked about. No one's winning anything in November or losing anything in essence either.
Right.
They weren't very good in the preseason though either. They looked rough even in the preseason. I mean, City in the preseason destroyed Madrid. I mean, that game I think was 3-0, I don't remember, but it was a convincing victory, and I understand it's a preseason, but Madrid actually looked worse than the scoreline. So I mean, they haven't really looked good all year, and Ronaldo's been out of form, I think would be a massive understatement, right. Which obviously makes Zidane's job more difficult, but I mean, Zidane is obviously one of those people that people are going to have in their in their top five managers. Sure. I mean, I think he has to be.
I think Ronaldo, he welcomed his fourth child into the world today, too. So maybe he's been a little preoccupied with that, possibly. I don't know. I think losing Gareth Bale has a lot to do with what that team can do. I mean, you're talking about a player who is a top five, top 10 player in the world. So losing somebody like that, Ronaldo's 32 years old at this point. You have to think that he's going to return somewhat to the mean at some point. But these things, I think Real Madrid's okay.
And the talk is that Bale's out for the rest of the year, of the calendar year, I should say. So he'll be back in 2018.
Wow. Well, there you go. Just a quick point. You had mentioned at the start of the show, you were talking about, you know, whether it was zero or nil. Mm-hmm. So I actually put that up as a quick show poll.
At
the minute, it's 50-50. And we have a comment from Elizabeth Williams. It just says nil.
There you go. She's right.
Way to go, Elizabeth.
All right, so next game, do we have any more?
Oh, yeah, there are plenty more.
England, we need to get the England game, because I know you're busting to get out.
Croatia-Greece, let's talk about the ones that matter. Croatia-Greece, Croatia destroyed Greece 4-1 in a lopsided game that I was semi-paying attention to as it was going on, and it was just one goal after another for Croatia. It was a pretty impressive display. The keeper kind of started things off with a really bad first touch. It was a pass back to him, and he just... horrible touch, and then he ends up taking out the guy, which leads to a PK. Modric buries it, and then the onslaught continues from there. I mean, we could go through each of the goals, but I don't know if we have all the time. But I mean, it was an impressive display. They had the replay just earlier today, and it was 0-0 in the end. And Croatia onto the World Cup, so they've stamped their ticket. I think they're actually a halfway decent team that could make some noise. And
that engine room that they have with Rakitic and Modric, I mean, that's going to get a lot going their way. Are they going to win the World Cup? More likely, no. More than likely,
get out of their group.
Get out of their group for sure, and not want to. You don't want to play them come to the knockout stages for sure. But Greece, it's sad to see, but they were playing a pretty decent side in Croatia. I think that's a fair result when it comes down to it.
Greece are generally a pretty tough team in tournaments because of the way they play. They play for the draw, and then they play the counter, and they try and do things on set pieces. That was how they scored their only goal of the two matches was off a set piece.
That Croatia squad, you look at that. You look at that starting 11. That squad is stacked, really, when you look at it. I mean, obviously, you know, Croatia is not a country that, when you talk about footballing nations, is going to, you know, pique anybody's ear. However, when you look at the players who are on that roster, where they play, and the level at which they play, that's a team, just like Christian just said, where they'll make it out of their group. And I wouldn't want to face them in the first 16, because that's a squad where if those players are all clicking, all playing, I mean, they're really dangerous.
I think that's a graduation as well of their generational talent that they've had, and we're starting to see a team like Belgium, the English young players as well. It's exciting to see these things gelling together for some nations that we don't, I guess, historic. Obviously, England's one of the top historic teams, but Croatia and Belgium, I don't know that they're necessarily sides that we look at highly in the past, but it's exciting to see the talent come together at the right time and have some of their players as the top players in the world. Obviously, Wales is a big miss on the international stage after their great showing in Euros last year, or 2 years ago at the time that we play the World Cup. They'll be a big miss, but seeing a talent like Gareth Bale not in the World Cup, it's unfortunate, and you know, we live in a nation where we're not seeing our top talent get to play. Although the U.S. women will play the Canadians this evening at 9 p.m. For those that are looking for a fix, our great U.S. women's team will take on probably one of our better rivals in Canada. It'll be an interesting match. I'm looking forward to getting to see what we're going to do against them tonight. Any takers on that?
The women played...
Yeah, tonight.
The women played Canada just earlier, a couple days ago, I thought.
I thought it's tonight.
Oh, it's tonight.
Yeah, it's tonight. I've got my DVR set, or at least it's sitting on my DVR.
They played maybe.
Don't spoil the result then.
It was a 1-1 draw.
Oh.
You know what, though? You mentioned MLS not playing because of the international break. That was scheduled a long time ago, because the reason originally was that, you know, teams like Toronto would have had Jozy Altidore and Bradley. They wouldn't have been here, but clearly that's not a concern for them anymore. But
just the U.S. though,
right? Houston has a bunch of Hondurans that played.
All right, guys, the time is 6:20. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back to the show. And I just did another English section. Why can't I not get I'm talking about
normal.
Let's
be normal. Come on. Just keep on.
Okay.
All right. Back to you, Don. You were saying, I'm sorry for interrupting you.
I don't know. We were just talking about MLS and the international break. And MLS would have had a lot of players out, actually, on the four teams that are left. If the U.S. had been in the World Cup.
Like Honduras is what
you're saying. Right, Honduras. Honduras had two or three starters that play for Houston. Toronto would have had a bunch of players, but like I said, they messed that up in Trinidad. So that's their consideration. We're not going to talk about it, but personally, MLS should end the season before we even get to this international break, but that's a total.
Or they should move to play at the same time as everyone else in the world.
Right.
And not play in the summer. Come on.
I have to counter what you were saying, Daniel, in that they don't care during the year when there's qualification going on. MLS continues to play regardless, which I think is an absolute shame. In that if you are an MLS supporter and you go to the stadium to see your players and the better players are going to be away on international, so what's more important than the player has to make a decision, and obviously nation always comes before club in the player's heart. So they go home and they go play for their home team, and meanwhile they're playing a league match where you're missing potentially a star quality level player. So I hear what you're saying, and yeah, MLS should end before all this starts, but there is a lot of talk about them moving to an international calendar, which is exciting, which is the first step in many steps they're going to need to take to revitalize MLS with a one or two month break for the holidays.
Or 2 months for the holidays. What holidays are you talking about? They play in the summer right now.
Right, but if they move to the international calendar,
so that's even a bigger change. Yeah.
Yeah. In essence, they would do what Russia's done, what Germany does, except they would take a full month or 2 months even
because of the cold weather many of the fields are outside. And
yeah.
Snow and whatnot, which, yeah. Hey, is sometimes a really fun game to watch in the snow.
I totally agree. I mean, I'm sure for the USA supporters here, we remember the match against, it was Costa Rica in Denver.
In Denver,
which
yeah.
was just fantastic because it was brutal. And I'm not a player myself. I can't imagine how difficult that must be. But it was certainly great television. I mean, the NFL, if I see a game is on, and I almost called it a match. If I see a game on in the snow, I do tend to linger a little bit on that because it's just good TV.
Well, Minnesota United played in the snow at the beginning of the season. I think they played Atlanta. That was a pretty crazy game. I didn't watch. I mean, I saw the highlights from it, but it was a lot of snow. It wasn't a little bit of snow because it's Minnesota in the early spring, and that happens.
I did go to an NYCFC match in the first season, and I think it was the second match of the year, and it snowed, and it was brutal for the supporters sitting in the stands. So if you are living in an area and it starts to snow and you're sitting in those stands, you are an excellent supporter because that is tough.
I mean, I've been to plenty of American football games where it's snowed, and you've just got to check the forecast before you go to any game because you know it's going to be
this
cold
time
or
of year.
Hot or whatever, you know?
Nah, see, I'm all about the couch and the big screen TV. Like, I'm not even ashamed. I am all about it. Guys keep trying to get me to umpire baseball, and I'm like, nah, I can't do it. I like climate control.
All right, so you were talking about, like, players taking country over club. That brings us neatly into the England game.
Well, okay, if we're going chronologically, yeah.
We don't have to go chronologically. We can just, you know, swing it out there, like, you know, England fan here.
Yeah, okay, let's talk England. I'm not going to say no to that. They played Germany in what could have been a pretty nice friendly. It was in Wembley.
The Germans, yes.
It was 0-0 in the end, 0-0. Christian says it was a very slow, boring game. I actually didn't think it was that bad. It was a midfield battle, and there were chances, not a lot of them. You know, it was kind of surprising to see the end because I watched it. You know, and at the end they're like Loftus Cheek, man of the match, and I'm sitting there like, okay, maybe he had a couple nice plays here and there, like a couple nice dribbles, but I didn't think he was man of the match good. I thought that Dyer, Trippier, Stones, Vardy all had decent games. I would not have put...
Dyer, Trippier were your first two names. What team is it that you support again? Who?
Does that Tottenham? Matter?
Well,
does that
I
matter?
Mean, you know, I think...
So Spursy.
I think it's fair to watch the match with eyes on the players that are on your club. I mean, seeing sure. Sané play for Germany was very exciting. I still am amazed that he's on the first side. For them, he's a young player, and I think Germany had a lot of players that didn't make the squad this particular match. It's important to know that there were a lot of players who didn't play.
For both teams,
right. And I hold Germany up to a pretty high standard because they've set that bar for themselves pretty high. They had their chances. Sané had a great chance within the first 15 minutes or so.
Underneath of the bar.
Right. And
bounced in.
As that occurred and he didn't finish it, I could hear you saying, you have to finish your chances. Or maybe it was Mark who talked about Sterling not finishing his chances, and that gets into their heads. And I'm like, okay, I'm not too worried about it. But yeah, I didn't find the match all that interesting. What I did find interesting, and this gets deeper into things, is that this was Remembrance Weekend, and to see the Veterans Day, to see the German side and the English side honoring all that, and I always find it interesting to see the crowds there, that there's just dead silence when they ask for the moment of silence, whereas in America, there's still sort of a rumbling in the crowd that doesn't ever get as quiet as it seems to get in Europe, specifically England. But to see Germany, a nation who was at the root of quite war, in that celebration or in honoring those fallen, I think that just it's the beautiful game that brings us together, right? It's this really ugly thing that occurred across Europe for a long time, and yet here we are in 2017, where these two sides of two great nations who fought bitterly against one another, that they can be on that pitch together, arm in arm, celebrating those who have passed. So, it gives me chills to think about. And here in America, obviously, our rich history of our veterans that have served and have lost their lives, that we can all still come together under this beautiful game. It brings us all together.
Yeah, it certainly was a nice display. But, yeah, just to get back to the match, I mean, certain players that caught my eye, I think Pickford had really good game.
He was excellent.
And Christian was messaging everyone during the game. He's like, Christian said, I think he won the number one for England.
Right. Is that it now? Or because I think Hart is supposed to get the start this week against, is it Brazil they're playing?
They're playing Brazil, yeah.
Yeah, and I think I had read that, but I thought, okay, Pickford for me was probably the man of the match because I just thought he did well. And, you know, I looked at him critically because this is the future for England, regardless of your thoughts on Hart. And you've got two City supporters here who probably, you know, when it comes down to it, we love Joe Hart, and we're always going to love Joe Hart. But his time as the England number one has come to an end.
Yeah, I would hope that Pickford, who has really, I think, a bright future, and I'm surprised that he is where he is in terms of the club, but we don't need to get into that right now.
But they were talking on Talk Sport about like how he's probably the one player from the England squad that got hurt the most out of all this change around. Like, he's gone. Pickford's taking his place, and that's it. You know.
Yeah, well, I mean, Hart had a terrible Euros and then didn't exactly, you know, pick it up when he went back to club football.
It seems like in every major tournament, he has a howler.
Yeah, and like I mean, you can't do that. And Pickford was really good. My thing about friendlies, though, drive me nuts because just like Christian said, there's portions of that friendly for like 20, 25 minutes where it really looks like a training drill. Where like
you're right.
England has like 10 players behind the ball and everybody's standing in straight lines and everybody's moving in exact unison and Germany is just dribbling around. And then you go to the other end of the field and you're doing the same thing on the other end. So, I don't know. Friendlies, I mean, obviously they're necessary because it's the only way these
change
teams
the
can play. Yeah, but it's just, I don't know. It's hard for me to get in. And then you run the risk of, you know, injury to these players in what are, I mean, say what you want. They are meaningless games. It's just to get training in to for the teams to gel together. And I can understand why, you know, a lot of controversy was made over some of the English players developing injuries all of a sudden, which I can understand.
But I mean, this is the way I look at it, is I have no problem with any player that wants to, they've played in competitive matches, whether it's for club or country, since the beginning of August or maybe middle of August. And we're in November and they haven't really they've been playing two games every week, you know, three if you want to go over 8 days. They're basically playing again and again and again. And then you look at teams that get injuries, and then we're like, oh, you didn't rotate the squad. What were you thinking? It's like, I have actually no problem with the Harry Kanes, the Dele Allis, who have – Ali definitely had an injury. That's why he didn't play in the last game against Crystal Palace. Kane obviously has had his injuries. Kane probably could have played if he really wanted to. I have absolutely no problem with these players saying, you know what? I just want to take a break and go to Portugal or whatever and, like, you know, get some rest, go to the beach.
Or just sit in the stands like Ali did. I mean, they showed him with his girlfriend sitting there, and I'm like, yeah, that to me is like, you live in London, the match is in London, I'm just going to go watch my guys and hang out with them after the match. Like, why risk something? For me, it gets back into like where the League Cup, where if you're in Champions League, I think this was brought up on the Facebook page for here for Charlottesville, where if your side is in the Champions League, that you can't be in the EFL Cup, or you have to play under 21s in that.
I want under 21s.
Yeah,
I want that whole cup to be under 21s.
Right, and I'm totally with you. If you're in the Premier League, you have to play under 21s. If you're in the Championship, then you can. Well, I don't really care.
Unless, of course, you're Man City, who plays their best squad possible and then goes to the 120th minute.
Yeah, and
PKs.
We don't lose when we're up 2-0 against our in City rival like you guys did against West Ham, but that's a whole other story.
Right, but you can also
I'd happily lose to not have to play in it again.
Right, but we'll march on. I think that there's a lot to be said for these guys taking breaks when they can, especially in a World Cup year. I mean, we're building up into Russia. They've got to be at their top game.
They're not going to get a break in the summer.
Right. There's not going to be any break. And the Premier League this year, to me, this top six battle is as good as it's going, mm-hmm. as it's been in probably a decade. I mean, yeah. we're basically mm-hmm. going back to 2008, which is to me the highest peak of the Premier League when you had United play Chelsea in the championship in the Champions League final. That era of Premier League football we have been sorely missing. All those players have gone to Spain or other places, and now everybody's come to England. All the great managers are in England. All the great players, for the most part, are in England. So this is a big year. I'm glad to see guys like Kane and Ali take breaks.
And so one of the nice things is you get to see some new players on the field. And so some of the players that you probably most of us would be surprised to see out there was, what, Harry Maguire playing in the back?
Did Winks play?
Winks did not play. Loftus Cheek, we mentioned him earlier.
Well, and Phil Jones got hurt in this match. So talk about
again,
a guy that is needed at his home club. Him being out for United, that's a big miss.
And he got injured a couple weeks ago as well. So this is a reoccurring thing. Tammy Abraham, Swansea player, another on loan Chelsea guy.
There's a great video of Southgate giving Abraham his shirt in the dressing room prior to, I think at the end of a Swansea match, where they basically told him, hey, you're going to be on the English side. And his joy is, it's awesome. It's really awesome.
The Livermore. Wasn't there a guy, Livermore?
Jake Livermore?
Yeah.
Jake Livermore, he was playing. But he actually starts for England normally.
Oh, really? Okay, because I thought when they mentioned it, they said he wasn't a normal.
No, he's a semi-surprising starter, but he's been that way for about a year. But he's one of the West Brom guys, right? You know.
I still find it interesting, and we don't have our resident Arsenal supporter here. He probably had shed a tear or two not to see his boy Wilshire out there.
He definitely wants him out there.
Yeah, and there's definitely a reckoning for Jack Wilshire at Arsenal. Like, where's this guy going to go? Because he's still relatively young, still has many years of professional playing in front of him, and if he's not going to get the time at Arsenal, where is he going to go? I mean, he's not going to go.
He could go many places.
He's not going to Russia. He's not going to Russia, right? I mean, he's not going to make the English side.
Not if he's not playing, obviously.
Right.
One thing that I thought was interesting for you City fans, Trippier starts over Kyle Walker, and then they substituted them later.
But, I mean, let's be real. Walker's been better than Trippier this season. I mean, City, look, everybody's going to bang on City because they'll say they let Trippier go, and he ends up at Tottenham. But Walker's been better than Trippier this year. And I think Walker is better than Trippier.
But Trippier had some really, really good matches, particularly in the Champions League. And he was arguably the best player on the field against Real Madrid.
Trippier was not good in the early stages of the England-Germany friendly. I can tell you that. That was a player who turned it over far too many times. And I was like, you know what, Spurs? Good on you. Go build around that guy, because while Kyle Walker might be
any team builds around a right back.
if you're able to turn a player over like Kyle Walker and get a lot of money for him, and you're going to rely on Trippier to take that cover over, you know.
But we have Serge Aurier.
You've got plenty of options, and that's great. But and if you want to bang on the fact that Walker didn't start the match, City supporters aren't crying about it. Frankly, he could have been sitting up there with Ali talking, you know, old days at Spurs. Like, we don't need to be here.
Fair enough, and honestly, that's part of the reason why some of these friendlies end up as they do in somewhat uneventful games, 0-0, because even the players know that, you know what, It's if it's a 50-50 ball where, you know what, maybe I slide in, I normally would. You know what, I'm not putting my leg out there because that's my career.
Well, I happened to just watch the Brazil-Japan friendly, and Gabriel Jesus was playing, and he scored a goal in the beginning. But the play, like 2 minutes before he came out of the game at 70 minutes, like he could have really gotten hurt. That game got really chippy for
it got really chippy.
Yeah, for a friendly, it was like, yo, what are y'all doing? Calm down.
Neymar kind of went off the rails in that game, and he elbowed a guy. And at the end, I don't know if you guys saw the press conference at the end, his coach comes out to defend him for being kind of, I don't know, maybe a little bit of, he was sulking.
He was over the top a little bit.
It didn't make any sense. And so the coach is out there talking about him, and Neymar literally starts crying.
Right, so this is a great talking point because this set Twitter on fire. Neymar basically breaking down, in essence, that the spotlight has been on this kid, and he still is a kid, relatively, for so long. And there's all this talk now that he's not happy at PSG, that the old guard there, him and Cavani, aren't getting along well, and it's not working out. And he has to come out and say, no, it's working out. You know, everything's okay.
Well, Cavani said he wants to go back to Napoli eventually and end his career there.
I just think to see what's occurring at PSG with the talent that they have and the rumors of Mourinho leaving United and going to PSG.
No.
Oh, that garbage fire, that's going to just get hotter and hotter and hotter as things go on.
But in that game, I mean, Japan, it's always hard to tell with Neymar because he likes to embellish all of his contact. Now, I will say, though, Japan, I mean, they really went after him in more than one instance. And, you know, he was trying to draw cards. But like I said, for a friendly, it was really chippy. And I was just thinking, get Jesus off the field. Like, you know, why don't, as a City supporter,
protect the City guy.
Right. Like, it's a meaningless game. Like, I understand that they're doing it because, you know, they need the time together. But it's a meaningless game. I don't want to see guys getting injured in meaningless games, whether or not they play for City, but especially if they do.
Marcelo had a really nice goal in that game. I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah, and Danilo had the assist on Jesus' goal. So that's a good City combo right there. And I'll get to see more of that as time goes on, if he can play it right back. But that's a whole different story.
But yeah, okay, so let's keep on moving to the one of the qualifying matches. That was one of the bigger, you could probably call it the surprise. Sweden at home beats Italy 1-0.
Let me just say this first. I miss Zlatan so much.
Zlatan was in the stands.
I know. He was in the stands, and I was just like, oh, man, that dude. Like, he retired before the injury kept him out. But, I mean, I just miss him.
He's going to come back to United.
No, I mean from international football. He retired from international football. Yeah.
That goal against England he scored a few years back, though.
Against Joe Hart.
Yep.
Well, I don't think God himself was keeping that goal out. That's a wonder strike, yeah.
Zlatan would tell you God himself put that in the net.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
It's because he is God,
he
right?
He is yeah, God, yeah, right. Yeah.
No, so in this game, the one goal that we got to talk about.
We'll need to cut the break first, but we'll talk about it when we get back. The time is 20 to 7. Yeah. We'll be right back. All right, guys, welcome back. I'm going to pass you over to Dan the Pole Man.
Okay, so
Twitter.
Here we go.
That's not a good nickname.
Yeah, I don't know. Can we got to work. We'll work on that on the break. So hit us up on Twitter at BOTBsoccer on Twitter. We have two polls up there. Right now, we've got the sort of impromptu poll was, are we talking 0 or 0 here in the States when we talk about scores for games? Nil is way in the lead right now, 83% to 17%. Yeah. So people are feeling nil. And then the other one about managers, who is the best manager in the world? Currently, Pep Guardiola leads the vote with Conte and Allegri tied behind him, and nobody has cast a vote for Zidane yet. So people aren't feeling us on Zidane at all.
No. Well,
clearly all the City supporters have been checking in. But well, Zidane's got
to
be...
To be fair, as a City supporter, I would rate Zinedine Zidane right now as the greatest manager in the world because of what he's done in the course of 2 years. And that goes to say that he's a two-time Champions League defending champion.
What about like the limited sample size, right?
You can say limited sample size. It's the course of two campaigns across Europe that he has conquered.
And I think I'm actually on the Zidane train here. Okay. I would say he's the number one. what I would say is that he is like a Harry Redknapp in that he's like a man manager. Like he's managing these egos. Mm, he's keeping everybody happy. That's the hardest thing to do at Madrid because they have so many stars. I mean, you look at their bench, and their bench at any game could really be the starting lineup for most league teams out there.
Right.
I mean,
he has so much talent and weapons at his disposal. I spent Saturday afternoon reading the newest last month's issue of 442, and they have a great cover story in regards to Zidane, and they talk about how Rafa Benitez had lost the dressing room there at Real Madrid. I mean, all these star players, you figure you just roll the ball out and you're going to win the La Liga, you're going to win this, you're going to win that. It's not true, and obviously Benitez really suffered there, and they were talking about how he lost the locker room. And one of the key points that the players had come back to was that he had run a free kick drill with the club, and he was telling them how to strike the ball during free kick practice. And you're talking to guys like Cristiano Ronaldo. I don't even have to say guys. You just talk. Cristiano Ronaldo would run that drill, and for anybody to sit there and tell him what to do, they
said he should be the coach. I mean,
right. That's one of the moments where you really. And these man managers, I mean, we've seen it here in America. I think the two greatest managers here in American sport over the last 20 or 30 years, Phil Jackson with the Lakers and the Bulls, and then you've got Joe Torre with the New York Yankees. These guys knew how to approach their players. It's not, hey, you play here, you move there, you do this, you do that. It's you come in the locker room knowing you've got a room full of men with the biggest egos and biggest talents in the world, and you make it work with each other. I mean, that's to me the most magical part of sports, is that no one's reinventing the wheel necessarily. I mean, you see occasionally tactics that work differently against different players and or different teams, and that's good. But managing those egos in that room, I can't imagine.
But it's always the little things that gets coaches over the top. It's like, oh, you go to like their son's birthday party or something like that. It's like you got to be in the family life is what it seems to be, like what the true winners do.
See, to me, I think so. I think the jury's still out on Zidane. Like he doesn't have enough years as a top flight manager for us to say he's automatically one of the best of all time. Now, I'll put in my vote for Pep because even before he went to City, because to me in the world of coaching and managing, regardless of the sport, in team sports with you know, playing with a ball, they're really, most managers fall into one of two categories. Either a manager who has a system and a way they want to play the sport, and they get players who fit into that system, or a manager who can go to a team and take whatever players are there and create a way of playing with those players.
I think that those are the coaches or the managers that are more impressive, which can adapt their system to the team that they have.
See, and what I admire greatly about Pep is that he has a definitive system, and he also gets players to play in that system that you wouldn't think would be able to. Like I said last week, Fabian Delph. There's no reason Fabian Delph should be a weekend starter at left back in the Premier League and playing well. Pep gets him to do that. You see the way he's transformed John Stones, the way he's gotten Nicolas Otamendi. He's gotten Otamendi to calm down. That dude was a kamikaze. Now, granted, he's on yellow card accumulation for next week, but it didn't happen in the third week of the season, so that's an improvement. That's the thing to me that is mind-blowing about, or that's so impressive about Pep, is not only the tactics that he plays, but that he gets these other players, he gets these players to fit into those tactics and buy into the system.
As much of a Pep guy as I am, he's not won anything recently. And that's what we're talking about right now. Who's the best manager in the world? Yeah, Pep's going to coach your guys up.
Pep won everything in Germany when he was there.
But he won the Bundesliga, but he didn't win
the Champions League.
And this is the bar.
He took the team over after they had just won the Champions League.
They won the treble.
Yeah.
So he never achieved.
And the current coach is back.
Right. He never achieved what the supporters there who have that high bar, just like the Real Madrid supporters have. You've got to win champions. You've got to be European champions. I don't see Pep yet to that level where he's taking on Zidane. Mm-hmm. Zidane is the best manager in the world.
All right. Wait a second. I know this is going to sound sacrilegious, but I don't actually, to me, evaluating who the best coaches and managers are, results is down the list a little bit because there's so many weird things that can happen.
Isn't that the most important thing? If you're winning,
right. But this is why it's subjective, right? But what I'm saying is, you could have situations where you could be an incredible manager and have one key injury and lose players. You could have a situation where, you know, when my New York Knicks were a fantastic team in the 90s, but they had to play against perhaps the greatest team ever assembled. And, like, you get no results, but that doesn't mean the team was terrible.
I just think it was hilarious that Christian earlier mentioned Phil Jackson and didn't mention anything about his Knicks GM horribleness.
Phil Jackson.
Trade Porzingis. Let's not talk about it.
Phil Jackson in his 70s.
We got to move on. We got to finish up that Italy Sweden game.
Oh, that's right. We promised to come back.
Yeah,
to
we did. We said we were going to come back to it. In the end, there was only one goal, so let's just talk about that real quick. There was a strike. It was a long throw that came back to, I forget the guy's name. It was like Johnson or something like that.
Swedish.
Yeah, something Swedish. Nordic, I believe.
Right.
And it went right off Derossi.
Probably an umlaut in his name somewhere.
And and that was the only goal of the game. And at the end of the game, the manager for Italy had a kind of bitter kind of statement saying that it was an undeserved defeat. Where if you watch the game, Sweden actually had a good number of chances. Maybe they didn't have all the possession. It was about 60-40 in favor of Italy. And obviously that's a fairly lucky goal, but Sweden had plenty of chances, and that was a semi-criticized statement right there. They're going to be playing either tomorrow or Tuesday. Actually, no, tomorrow, I believe. Tuesday is the Ireland match.
Does this bring Conte back to Italy now? Is he going to take over that Italian national club? Because
I saw Italy play Spain last year in the Euros, and the job that Conte did against Spain, who, you know, plenty of people were saying were the favorites going in, they dismantled them in that game in Paris.
Right.
It was a fantastic game.
I think that's where he belongs. I think he's a great international manager, and Chelsea is going to turn their project over to the next manager the second the wind goes against him. So,
yeah, but he was doing double duty then.
Right.
And I think he can do double duty for Italy as well, again.
How many managers, and this is really fascinating, how many managers can handle both fronts like that?
Not many.
I don't see any.
It's not many. You've got to be a workaholic.
I don't know that. I get the sense that Conte, I agree. I think he should be the Italy manager. And, oh, man, if Italy doesn't go to the World Cup, Italy will burn on Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's going to be bad. But I think Conte should be the manager. I
and
get the sense that he
Italy.
Doesn't.
That'll
yeah, I know. It'll be in. It'll be at the San Siro. So, yeah they need to pull one out.
Yeah.
I don't know that he wants to be in the day-to-day club grind anymore. I get that sense.
Okay, yeah, so we got to keep on going. Other matches that happened, Honduras, Australia, 0-0.
Australia. All right.
I didn't see it, but everybody said that game was
terrible. 0-0, 0-0.
Yeah.
Like, that was the worst Australian accent ever.
Go ahead.
Yeah, all right, and then the other game, New Zealand, Peru, 0-0 as well, so... yeah, not much going on there. Then we go on to Saturday. That was the Ireland-Denmark game, which we already kind of discussed. So we'll just move on. Today, there were the replays of the Switzerland-Northern Ireland game, which, again, we discussed. Croatia again. There was not much going on after that. Tomorrow, we got a good one. Like we were just saying, Italy-Sweden. It'll be really interesting to see what happens in that one. Christian, you're nodding your head. Who do you have in that one?
Well, I have to pull for Italy just because I want to see Gigi Buffon again in the World Cup. This is his swan song. He's going to retire after this. I want to see him go out on a shield, essentially. You know, I don't know that Italy can win the World Cup, especially since they found themselves in qualifying trouble like they have. But, the World Cup without Italy is probably not the World Cup. I mean, they'll play those games regardless of who's there. But I think this whole double leg format, and we see it in Champions League as well, where the first leg, the home team or the away team is just trying to grind out the draw and maybe counter and get that one away goal that will carry them into the second leg. But and we're seeing it in MLS as well with the two leg playoff. I wish there was a better way. Daniel and I were kind of chatting about.
I like it. I like home and away.
Yeah,
what's wrong there?
I think just the immediacy of finding yourself in that. Like, you shouldn't want to be in that playoff, and that's where, as American supporters, we were coming in like, oh yeah, we'll be in that two leg playoff if we get through. So no matter what, we got that going for us. Well, guess what? We didn't get that. And B, I think that it's not you want that immediate death result where it's like, you know what? There's one match. Whoever wins this match is marching on. Then the other, it's like the NCAA tournament. That's what makes the basketball tournament so great. Is like, this is it. You play each other. That's it. End of story.
And the thing that I don't like about it is, one of the things I don't like about it is it really negates home field advantage. Like having both teams play at home.
But who deserves the home field advantage in these situations?
Well, it should be, they can have some way of determining it, whether it's, I mean, FIFA rankings are stupid, but I mean, you could do FIFA rankings or goal differential in your group or whatever, or in international competitions, play at a neutral site. I don't care, but I want to see one.
What's wrong with
I want to see
away?
One
That's
game.
Champions League. I don't like
it in the Champions League either, so.
I don't either.
I mean, it needs to be a knockout. When you get into the last, 16, it needs to be a knockout tournament.
Yeah, but we're not
it
in
needs
the
be.
World Cup finals yet. I think it's fine to have these.
Oh, but still, if you're going
to
be in the World Cup.
In a neutral location, what are you going to do?
I just don't like it. I mean, you watch some, like, the two games today, because teams, got their goal, because Switzerland got their goal, rightly or wrongly, against Northern Ireland. That game today was trash.
But let me tell you this. Okay, so what if the U.S. was where Honduras is and was playing against, Australia?
Yeah.
And then, okay, so we're going to have the game in Johannesburg or in London or somewhere random. How many fans are really going to show up to that?
I'm not
match?
Saying you have to. I'm just throwing out ideas here. But maybe, I mean, someone needs to have home field advantage. I mean, even in America where we have 7-game series, 5-game series, someone has the home field advantage. And playing the second leg at home, I don't think is really that much of an advantage. I don't know. I don't like two-legged series to decide stuff like this. Just like I was saying before, I hate PKs to decide championships. Hate it.
Right, and we saw that today here for UVA losing in the ACC final against Wake Forest. Dreadful match. Not dreadful, but went 0-0, went to penalties at the end, and Wake goes through and wins the championship. It's tough. I don't know, and Daniel and I were talking about it via text. How do you end these matches that end 0-0. I won't speak for
or
Daniel.
Just a draw. I mean, it could be one.
Right,
one, two,
whatever it may be. I mean, I don't want to see guys zombie up and down the field. Like, to me, penalty kicks are great because keepers do save them. Players do miss them. The pressure is so high, and you get into these big tournaments where you have penalty kicks, and I think the excitement is worth the price of admission. Again, this is the immediacy of live or die. You move on or you don't move on. And penalty kicks, to me, I think that's the only way to decide it. Thank goodness we do it this way versus the way MLS used to do it back in the day, where guys would run from the 50. I can't even get the words out of my mouth without laughing.
It's like the ice hockey thing.
Yeah, it's absurd. So I love penalty kicks, and I'm awful at them in FIFA. So whenever we play each other, don't give penalties away to me. Well, do give penalties away to me, because I will miss every single one.
But here's my thing. The NHL playoffs, right? The NHL playoffs, to me, is one of the greatest sports, professional sports tournaments in the world. Now, the NHL has shootouts during the regular season to decide games, the outcome of games. Once you get to the playoffs, you play until someone wins the game. And that's my thing. Like, the famous Herm Edwards quote, my man Herm Edwards,
you play to win the game.
Someone needs to go out and win the game. The thing I'm tired of seeing, and it kind of happened in the UVA game today, like, we get to extra time, and now both teams are just like, let's just play to get to the shootout. We don't want to give up anything. No, I want to see someone win the game. One of my most vivid and, in some respects, most regrettable memories, like saddest memories of sport, is the 1994 World Cup final when Roberto Baggio kicked that ball
skied it over the
map. That's just a terrible way, A, for a team to win the World Cup. And I mean, I don't know. It's like, we're going to play this whole match, and now the outcome of the match is going to be determined by your fourth or fifth best finisher on the team. I don't like the whole thing.
It's really tough, because I think you play to win games, just like you said with Herm Edwards. And I think we just became better friends because you're a Jets fan too, and I'm sorry. We both have that in our lives. But, you go out there to entertain and to win.
You poor souls, let's be honest.
Yeah, Come on, poor souls, it's tough. But I think going out to win the match, and if you lose in the process of trying to win, then there's no shame in that. But right. playing to go to kicks or playing for draws or this or that, I mean, again, I said this last week, Pep will play a match where he'll give up three, but he'll score six. And that's the kind of manager I want. So maybe I'm going to change my vote on best manager in the world. Maybe Pep is the best manager in the world.
That's just an amazing turn of events here. But no, I mean, so it'd be super interesting, I think, is because you're talking about how you play the game. The World Cup draw is coming up. I think it's in like early December. I think maybe even the first. It's going to be super interesting once the teams have all been locked in and you set the groups. And obviously you get the group of death and the this and the that. But then you're going to start already talking about strategy for the World Cup.
Who's going to play for a draw?
You play for a draw against the big boys, and you try and beat the minnows is how most teams play.
Right.
And that's why the Greeces of the world have actually won, like the Euros, for instance. It's because they know how to play like a tournament style. They know how to do that, and sometimes it creates negative football. It's ugly results. It's not pretty, but it's
effective. One of the things I hate about the World Cup. The opening rounds of the group rounds of the World Cup, we're talking about who's going to get a draw. Like, oh, come on, man. We got it. There's got to be another way.
All right, guys. So coming to the end of the show, our Twitter polls. One of them is closed already, which was the best manager in the world right now. Pepe is 50%.
Pepe.
I call him Pepe. I've always called him Pepe.
Is there some manager I've never heard of? I don't know this Pepe guy.
Pep of 50%. Conte got 25%. Zinedine got 0.
Apparently, didn't even get a vote. Apparently I needed a vote.
You should have voted.
The other one that's still open is nil versus 0, and way ahead in 71 is nil. 71% of people think that nil is the better.
That's a fair result. I don't think we need to go to penalty kicks on that.
So what is your predictions for the England game on Tuesday before we leave?
So England Brazil that's going to be about as good of a fixture as you can get. My prediction 1-1.
2-0 Brazil.
My prediction, much like Clubber Lang and Rocky III, pain.
I don't think England are. I've got a bit of a hope, but yeah, I'm a pessimist. So, all right, guys. So that's the end for the show this week. We'll be back next Sunday. Obviously, there'll be more Premier League coming up this weekend. I can't believe it. Awesome.
And we've got a great match.
All right,
Tottenham Arsenal.
Yeah, awesome. All right, I'm Andy,
Alex,
Daniel,
Christian.
Have a great week, guys.
You've been listening to Blokes on the Bench with your host, Andy Richardson, on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. Join us again next Sunday at 6 for another edition and feed us back at facebook.com/blokesonthebench.